They say the money is there. 2 billion euros sitting quietly in Asian bank accounts held in trust, waiting to be counted. Auditors ask for proof, not projections, not emails, not assurances. They want confirmation from the banks themselves. Days pass, then weeks. The documents arrive late. Some look copied, some look wrong. The banks stay silent. Inside Wirecard, executives push confidence. Public statements stay calm. Growth continues. The stock holds. Regulators watch from a distance and choose not to intervene. Behind closed doors, the numbers stop lining up. Cash that should settle questions only creates more. Every delay tightens the pressure. If the money is real, one phone call should end this. If it is not, everything collapses. The auditors are still waiting. Chapter 1. The numbers that would not balance. Wirecard's story rested on growth. Digital payments, borderless commerce, a German answer to Silicon Valley. By early 2020, the company claimed it was holding roughly 2 billion euros in cash, not in Germany, not in Europe, in trustee accounts in Asia. The money mattered. Those balances anchored Wirecard's profits. They justified its valuation. They reassured investors that the business was real and liquid. Without them, the company was exposed. EY had audited Wirecard for years. Each cycle followed the same pattern. Management provided documents, trustees confirmed balances, the audit signed off, the process moved on. This time it stalled. EY asked for something basic. Direct confirmation from the banks holding the funds. Not copies, not summaries. Original confirmations sent independently. The request was not unusual. What followed was, Wirecard's executives said the banks were slow. They said the accounts were held through trustees. They said cultural differences in time zones caused delays. Days passed. No confirmations arrived. Inside EY, the tone shifted. Audit teams flagged the issue upward. This was not a missing receipt or a late invoice. This was cash, a massive portion of the balance sheet. Wirecard responded with documents, letters bearing bank logos, statements showing balances down to the euro. They looked official. They were formatted correctly, but something felt off. The confirmations did not come directly from the banks. They came through intermediaries tied to Wirecard. That broke protocol. EY asked again. This time the request was explicit. Independent confirmation only. Wirecard pushed back. Executives said the demand was excessive. They reminded auditors of past cooperation. They stressed the risk of disrupting business relationships in Asia. Publicly, nothing changed. Wirecard continued to present itself as stable and innovative. Quarterly reports highlighted expansion and revenue growth. In Germany, regulators watched quietly. Wirecard was a national success story, a rare fintech champion. Criticism, when it surfaced, was often framed as market manipulation. Short sellers had raised alarms before. They questioned revenue sources. They questioned overseas profits. German authorities had investigated the critics instead. Now the doubts were inside the audit itself. Emails moved between EY partners and Wirecard management. The language was formal but tense. Each side defended its position. EY documented the risk. If the cash could not be verified, the audit opinion could not stand. That was not a threat. It was a requirement. Wirecard insisted the money existed. They said the trustees were reputable. They said the funds were tied to third-party acquiring businesses in Asia. The structure was complex by design. Payment processing across borders often is. That complexity had protected Wirecard before. This time, it raised suspicion. Behind the scenes, audit teams attempted alternative verification. They traced transaction flows. They reviewed settlement patterns. The numbers circled back to the same claim, 2 billion euros held elsewhere. The problem was simple. No one outside Wirecard could see it. As weeks stretched on, pressure built, not just on the auditors, on the company. Financial statements were due. Markets expected clarity. Wirecard's leadership held firm. Statements to investors emphasized confidence. There was no hint of internal strain. Within EY, discussions turned to escalation. Senior partners debated next steps. Signing off without confirmation would violate standards. Refusing to sign could trigger a crisis. The standoff hardened. Wirecard sent additional letters. They included signatures, stamps, contact details. They appeared to close the gap. EY examined them closely. Metadata raised questions. Formatting inconsistencies appeared. The source of the documents remained indirect. The auditors did not accuse. They asked again. This time, the answer was silence. The Asian banks did not respond. Not to calls, not to emails, not to formal requests. Wirecard said the banks were cooperating through trustees. EY said that was not enough. Internally, Wirecard executives debated their options. Disclosing uncertainty could trigger panic. Pushing back risked confrontation. They chose to push back. The company argued that demanding direct bank confirmation in Asia ignored local practices. They framed the issue as cultural misunderstanding. They implied bias. The auditors stayed focused on evidence. Standards did not change by geography. Outside the audit rooms, the market remained calm. Wirecard's stock price held. Analysts repeated management's assurances. Regulators did not intervene. No public inquiry was opened. No warning was issued. The gap between perception and reality widened. By late spring, the audit timetable was breaking. EY had not signed. Wirecard had not proven the cash. The question was no longer technical. It was existential. If the money was real, confirmation would arrive. If it was not, everything built on it would fall. Inside Wirecard, the pressure intensified. Years of reported profits depended on those balances. So did executive credibility. EY documented each step, every request, every delay, every unanswered call. The auditors were no longer chasing paperwork. They were testing the foundation of the company. The silence from the banks grew louder. By early June, the deadline loomed. Financial statements could not wait indefinitely. Neither could the truth. The money still had not been confirmed. And for the first time, the possibility that it did not exist was no longer unthinkable. Chapter 2. The confirmations that collapsed. The answers arrived all at once. They were not the answers Wirecard expected. In early June, as deadlines closed in, EY escalated beyond documents. They contacted the banks directly. Not through trustees, not through intermediaries. Straight to the institutions named on the balance sheets. The response was brief and definitive. The accounts did not exist. Philippine banks issued formal statements. They denied holding any funds for Wirecard. They denied relationships with the named trustees. The letters were clear. No cash, no accounts, no record. The effect inside the audit team was immediate. What had been doubt became fact. What had been tension became rupture. EY informed Wirecard's leadership. The claimed 2 billion euros could not be verified because it was not there. The trustee confirmations provided earlier were now treated as suspect. Wirecard did not deny the bank's statements at first. Executives asked for time. They said they were investigating discrepancies. Within days, the story broke publicly. On June 18, 2020, Wirecard issued a statement. It said the cash balances might not exist. It said there was a risk the trustee accounts were fictitious. Markets reacted in minutes. The stock collapsed. Billions in market value disappeared in hours. Analysts scrambled to rewrite their models. Years of profits were now in question. If the cash was fake, so was the earnings it supported. Investors demanded explanations. Wirecard executives held calls. They offered few answers. The company blamed deception. It suggested trustees had misled them. It implied an elaborate fraud beyond management's knowledge. That claim immediately raised another question. How could 2 billion euros vanish without anyone noticing? Internal controls came under scrutiny. Wirecard's business relied on third-party partners to process payments in Asia. Those partners reported transactions and balances back to headquarters. Oversight was thin. Verification relied on documents provided by the same structures generating revenue. As the truth emerged, the architecture collapsed. The cash was not just missing. It had never been there. EY refused to sign the financial statements. The audit opinion was withdrawn. Without audited accounts, Wirecard could not operate as a public company. The admission triggered regulatory action. German authorities opened investigations. Offices were searched. Records were seized. Inside Wirecard, panic set in. Executives resigned. Others claimed ignorance. The narrative shifted from innovation to deception. Questions multiplied faster than answers. How long had the fraud been running? Who created the fake confirmations? Who benefited? Emails and internal records were reviewed. Patterns emerged. Warnings had surfaced years earlier. Whistleblowers had raised concerns about Asian operations. Journalists had questioned profit margins that defied logic. Short sellers had published detailed critiques. Each time Wirecard pushed back, critics were framed as hostile. Authorities often accepted that framing. Now the evidence was undeniable. The trustee letters that once reassured auditors were examined again. Signatures were traced. Formatting anomalies stood out. Investigators concluded the documents were forged. The scale of the fraud stunned the market. 2 billion euros represented a significant portion of the company's assets. Without it, insolvency was inevitable. On June 25, 2020, Wirecard filed for insolvency. It was the first time a major German company listed on the DAX had collapsed so abruptly. Employees learned through news alerts. Investors watched losses crystallize. Partners froze relationships. The company that had promised frictionless payments now embodied systemic failure. Executives attempted to shift responsibility. Some pointed to rogue employees. Others claimed oversight gaps. The chief executive stepped down. He insisted he had been deceived. Investigators were unconvinced. Attention turned outward. How had regulators missed this? How had auditors signed off for years? Germany's financial watchdog faced criticism. Its prior defense of Wirecard now looked misplaced. Parliamentarians demanded answers. The collapse rippled beyond one company. It exposed weaknesses in oversight structures. It challenged assumptions about national champions. For investors, the damage was immediate and permanent. Pension funds took hits. Retail investors lost savings. For the audit profession, the implications were severe. EY faced lawsuits alleging negligence. Its reputation suffered globally. Wirecard's story shifted from growth to cautionary tale in days. What had been a fintech success became a symbol of institutional blindness. The missing cash was no longer hypothetical. It was officially non-existent. The confirmations had collapsed, and with them, the company's credibility. What remained was a deeper question. How many systems had failed to let this happen? As investigators moved forward, one truth was clear. The fraud did not survive scrutiny. It thrived on trust, and that trust was gone. Chapter 3, 1,000 words plus. Chapter 3, after the fall, the collapse did not end the story. It began the reckoning. Once Wirecard filed for insolvency, the question shifted from what happened to who would answer for it. German prosecutors moved quickly. Raids followed. Offices were sealed. Servers were taken offline. What had been a market crisis became a criminal investigation. Former executives were questioned within days. Some cooperated. Others disappeared from public view. The chief operating officer was arrested. He denied responsibility and pointed upward. Investigators said the fraud could not have survived without internal coordination. The former chief executive left Germany. His whereabouts became uncertain. An international arrest warrant followed. For investors, the damage was irreversible. Shareholders were wiped out. Bondholders joined long lines of creditors with little hope of recovery. Thousands of employees faced uncertainty. Many had believed in the company. Their work, their reputations, and their futures were tied to a name now synonymous with fraud. The focus widened. How did this happen in one of Europe's most regulated markets? Parliament convened inquiries. Lawmakers demanded timelines, emails, warnings ignored. Germany's financial watchdog faced sustained scrutiny. For years, critics had raised red flags. Journalists documented inconsistencies. Short sellers published detailed analyses questioning revenue and cash flow. Instead of investigating the company, regulators often investigated the critics. Some faced legal pressure. Some were publicly dismissed. That history became impossible to defend. The inquiry exposed a culture of deference. Wirecard had been treated as a national success story. Its growth narrative discouraged skepticism. Oversight structures were fragmented. Responsibility was diffused. No single authority saw the full picture. Auditing came under the harshest light. EY had signed off on Wirecard's accounts for years. The firm insisted it had been deceived by forged documents and elaborate misdirection. Plaintiffs argued that was not enough. Lawsuits followed across multiple jurisdictions. The question was not intent, but diligence. Auditors are gatekeepers. When gatekeepers fail, trust collapses, and the courts began sorting facts from defenses. Some cases moved slowly, others settled quietly. Germany initiated reforms. Financial supervision was reorganized. Audit oversight rules were tightened. These changes came too late for those already harmed. They were designed to prevent repetition, not repair loss. Wirecard became a case study taught in business schools and regulatory workshops. Not as innovation, as warning. Investigators pieced together the mechanics of the fraud. fake trustee accounts, forged confirmations, revenue inflated through opaque third-party partners. The complexity was not accidental. It obscured responsibility. It delayed detection. Yet complexity alone could not explain longevity. The fraud endured because challenges were deflected, delayed, or dismissed. Trust filled the gaps where verification should have lived. The insolvency administrator worked through remnants of the company. Assets were sold. Contracts were unwound. What remained was a hollow shell. The business that once processed payments at scale was dismantled piece by piece. International confidence in German oversight took a hit. Allies questioned safeguards. Markets recalibrated assumptions. The story reached beyond one firm. It raised uncomfortable truths. Regulation is only as strong as its skepticism. Audits only matter when evidence is demanded, not assumed. Wirecard had claimed innovation justified opacity. The market accepted that claim until proof was required. By the time proof was demanded, there was nothing to prove. Years after the collapse, the effects lingered. Legal proceedings continued. Reputations remained damaged. Some individuals would face prison. Others would face permanent professional exile. For victims, closure was uneven. Financial losses were permanent. Answers came slowly. The fraud ended, but its lessons did not. Trust, once broken at scale, reshaped systems. Rules tighten, scrutiny sharpens. Yet the conditions that allowed Wirecard to rise still exist. Complexity, speed, deference to success. The company is gone. The money never existed. What remains exposed is the cost of believing without seeing.